This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. That connects you between the San Fernando Valley and LA's West Side in 15 minutes along the 405. Steve Chiotakis, 15 minutes. Sounds like a fantasy, right? But that's exactly the pitch that the folks over at Metro have been making all across LA this summer.
You may need to hold on to your seat while you're on the train. That's an incredible time savings compared with perhaps a 1 to 2 hour slog over the Sepulveda Pass in a car.
Dave Sotero is spokesperson for LA Metro, which is working on the Sepulveda Transit Corridor project. That's Metro's plan to build a heavy rail line through the Sepulveda Pass, the more than 1,100-foot mountain that separates the San Fernando Valley from Westwood. Now, there are four plans leading the way right now, and a seemingly infinite number of opinions for each one of them.
Why do the alignments on the west side go all underground, and the valley side shows two proposals that are above ground? I know we get this question a lot. So can we try to address that for our audience today?
KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb went to one of Metro's presentations in Van Nuys over the weekend. He joins me now in the studio to tell us more about what is planned for the pass and how the communities that this rail system would serve feel about it all. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
There are a lot of opinions, right? Well, you know old saying about opinions. 15 minutes from the valley to the west side. It sounds too good to be true, right? And I'm sure there are plenty of folks sitting right now in their cars thinking the exact same thing.
Absolutely, Steve. And as someone who takes the 405 every single day from the west side back to the valley, I can tell you right now with much authority that it's a horrible commute. And so there are a lot of different options that Metro is exploring right now. They've keyed in on four different plans that are being considered, which all start at the Van Nuys Metrolink station. This is at Van Nuys Boulevard, just north of Satakoy, which you might know if you've ever taken the Amtrak before, right?
Right, the Metrolink.
Exactly. Yeah. Four different options here. Two of the options are heavy rail line options, which is basically a subway they're going to bore underground. This is going to go from Van Nuys down Van Nuys Boulevard, underground through the pass into UCLA, and then connect with the Expo line.
All right, okay? So underground. All right.
That's right. Another plan actually goes diagonal to Sepulveda. And then there are two plans that involve aerial trams. So one of them is a combination of an aerial tram and boring underground. And then that very popular monorail idea that's going to go along the 405. So those
monorail,
are the four plans.
The monorail has been around for a long time, that idea, right?
That's right.
So it's going to start at the Metrolink station, and the line would connect, no matter how it goes across, it's all going to bore under the Sepulveda Pass, right? All of those lines go under the pass.
At some point. The fourth one, the monorail plan, it's going to go along the 405 and at some point duck out and then go under the pass to UCLA.
And then, all right, so to UCLA. Where would it connect on the west side?
So the connection on the west side is going to start at that future Purple Line extension, which we know is going to go actually through the west side, connecting at UCLA and continuing past the 405, then onto the Expo Line. And eventually, Steve, eventually down the line, this is going to connect to LAX, which I know a lot of folks in the Valley are saying, thank God, because it's really difficult to get to LAX. But again, that is years and years, perhaps decades away. But even so, I met some folks at the Van Nuys Metro meeting over the weekend. One of them was Joseph Chilcote. He was hanging out with his infant in a stroller, listening to Metro present these ideas. And he told me he commutes between Van Nuys and Westwood for work every day. And this is what he thinks is most important when picking the project he supports.
Costs are obviously important. They really need to prioritize like transit time, I think. You know what I mean? Because this is going to be here for hopefully 100 plus years or something. So if they choose a route that saves 5 minutes, that's, you know, billions of minutes over that period of time. So whatever gets people where they need to go quicker, which I think might be the smart choice, but we'll see.
And Steve, just to give you a little taste of how much time Metro says you're going to save, from Van Nuys Metrolink to the Expo Line, the subway lines can take somewhere around 16, 17 minutes. It's about 26 minutes for the monorail plan, and you know how long it takes on the roads.
It could be twice, three times as much, yeah, and on some days. Now, transit time obviously is definitely important, but cost is obviously, Benjamin, a big part of this as well. What do we know about the cost of these plans?
So each plan has a different cost estimate. And I want to emphasize, this is an estimate because we know projects like these, they have a tendency to go over budget. But here's what Metro is telling us. The most expensive are going to be the two subway lines, around $11 to $14 billion. And then the cheapest one's going to be that monorail option, which is more in the $11.5 billion range.
All right. So those are some big numbers. Is there money for this? I know we passed a couple of tax measures, right?
Yeah, for some of it, there is. So remember, LA County voters, you and I, passed Measure M back in 2016. That's the half-cent sales tax increase for transportation projects. So just under $6 billion from that is earmarked for the Sepulveda Pass project. There's also Measure R going back in time, 2008, another sales tax increase. So there are measures to fund stuff like this. A good chunk of the change, but not enough, not all of it, right? So Metro says they're looking at some other options, perhaps state and federal grants. Also maybe partnering up with some private companies, the private sector, to make this a little bit cheaper.
Yes, well, we'll hear more about coming up when it comes to other corridor plans as well. How do Valley residents feel, Benjamin, about these ideas? Is there a clear favorite?
I would say they fall into three buckets, Valley residents, at least the folks that I met. First, there's the raised monorail people. That's the slowest, but also the cheapest option, and it's the one that Ricardo Abrines supports. I met him. He lives in Sherman Oaks. He's actually been a monorail supporter for decades, and it all began, he told me, shortly after a trip he took to Tokyo.
I came back to Los Angeles exactly when they inaugurate the blue line from Long Beach to downtown. 25 miles an hour. Red light, stop. Keep going. I am coming from Japan, and this guy is going 200 miles an hour, and we are going 25, and I ask, what is wrong with us?
Yeah. Ricardo, Steve, is actually a pretty interesting guy. He's an artist, and he made this rendering back in the 70s of a monorail through the pass, and he showed it to me. And he tells me he actually sent it to Metro, and they responded with a letter saying it was a great idea, and now decades later, stuff is starting to happen with
decades
that.
Decades later,
yeah.
Of course.
Okay, now the two other groups are both very anti-monorail and big-time subway supporters.
All right, so they get started on this eventually, they break ground, and it's done in a couple of weeks, right?
The plan is 2033. That's
oh
the estimated
goodness.
Opening date. But of course, we have something coming in 2028 to Los Angeles.
Oh, what is it? What is it? Oh, the world. That's right.
Summer Olympics 2028, and Metro says they would love to get this done in time for that. But again, it sounds like that's going to be a long shot.
We hear, Benjamin, and this is in all seriousness, that Metro ridership is down. This is something that we've talked about in the past. More people driving their cars. If it's built, will people use this?
Steve, it's the question. If they build it, will they come? And speed, I found out, is going to be a big issue. I reminded Dave Sotero of Metro that the Expo Line riders, they complain often that it's way too slow. It can take like 50 minutes to go about 15 miles from Santa Monica to downtown LA.
Well, the Expo Line is a light rail line, and it does have to traverse through downtown streets and over the west side, which is a congested area, in order to get to reach Santa Monica. So what we're talking about for the Sepulveda Transit Corridor project is a high-speed, high-capacity transit service. So a subway is fundamentally different. We know the ridership is going to be there, and so that's why we're looking at the highest serving line we could possibly deliver for taxpayers.
So he says the ridership is going to be there. That's a bold prediction, given that the transit system as a whole, as you mentioned, has been bleeding ridership. Not just buses, but for the first time in several years, train riders too this year went down. There's also the issue of safety, which is top of mind for another Sherman Oaks resident that I met. Her name is Hillary Pickles.
If it's a very smooth operating machine where I was going to feel safe on it as a single woman, then yes, because somebody brought up the point in the meeting where currently the transit situation, it's not clean, you don't feel safe. The two times that I've taken it, I had somebody grab me, and I probably will never take it again for that reason.
So obviously she had a very negative experience using Metro. Metro is hoping that this line might encourage her to get back on its service, and they're estimating daily ridership numbers in the 122 to 138,000 range for this project, depending on which one they choose.
All right. And a choice they will obviously have to make sometime in the near future. We'll keep watching to see how all this comes together. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Benjamin, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
So many freeways, so many lanes, so little time to get from one place to another. And, you know, LA is not one of those 20 minutes from one place to the other place anymore. So Lots to talk about as we continue. What does a freeway improvement plan really mean? Does it improve things? And for whom? You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. There is a whole lot of evidence that says freeway expansions don't really work, at least not the way drivers want them to. Drivers obviously want added lanes to relieve congestion, but do expansions really do that? LA Metro and Caltrans are moving forward on a $4 billion project to expand the 605, not the 405, the 605, from Rosecrans Avenue up until it hits the 10 freeway in Baldwin Park. Not to mention the so-called 60 swarm, which is already underway on the 60 freeway, even the construction of a new freeway in the high desert. So, the city and the county are investing a lot of money, we're talking billions of dollars, in trying to make it easier to get around, but how much do the investments pay off? Brian Taylor is a professor of urban planning and director of the Institute of Transportation Studies over at UCLA on the West Side. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. We're also joined by Isidro Panuco, who manages the highway program over at LA Metro. Hi, Isidro.
Hello.
I want to start with the 605 expansion project, Isidro, because this is sort of your bailiwick. What problems is this meant to fix?
Great. Yes. So as you may know, the freeway was initially built in about the 1960s. Population growth has continued to increase, and along with that also has congestion along the corridor. Some of the main focuses of this project would be to better manage existing traffic and future traffic. So we're not only looking to add more capacity, but we're also evaluating express lanes on the corridor to manage that demand.
Is there an ETA when this is going to begin or when it will end?
Sure. So currently we are in the environmental phase of the project. Construction would still be in the foreseeable future, likely in the mid to late 2020s.
Brian, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. When people say that freeway expansions do not work, that's not exactly right. I mean, when you add lanes, you are getting more travel service out of those freeways, right?
Right. So we have a region of about 19 million people in terms of the greater Los Angeles region. And we also have a tradition that anybody can drive anytime they want, anywhere they want. And anytime you get 20 million people together with the freedom to drive anywhere you want, anytime you want, congestion is inevitably going to result. But as the region grows, more people need to get around. Now, to the average driver, as you point out, they say, oh, they're going to do this project. Finally, it's going to relieve congestion, allow us to get through here. Well, what it ends up doing is allowing more people to get through the corridor, more goods to get through the corridor, and that can benefit the region in lots of ways. But because we have so many people and so many cars and so many people wanting to move around and a limited number of freeways, we're inevitably going to be struggling with congestion. So from the perspective of the driver who says, finally, is it going to be congested free over Sepulveda Pass or up through the northern part of the 605? The answer is, well, things will flow better for a while and they'll probably start to clog up again. Now, from the perspective of reducing congestion, you say, oh, well, then it was a failure. If your goal, however, was to be able to move more people through and more goods through, well, then it was a success.
That's a little solace, though, to somebody who's stuck right now at Skirball trying to get over the Sepulveda Pass, right? It's like, well, it's getting more people across, but you're still stuck for, whatever, 15, 20, 25 minutes.
That's absolutely right. And so if the desire is to be able to move without congestion, the solution that analysts have is wildly unpopular with motorists and elected officials. And that is that you charge for the use of the road. So elected officials come to me all the time. They say, oh, what can we do about congestion? Tell me what we can do. I say, well, we can start pricing roads. And they say, is there anyone else here I can talk to? So it's an unpopular idea.
I know there's a new freeway that's been planned. And I can't even believe I'm saying this. A new freeway that's planned in the high desert. This is an $8 billion project, Isidro. For something totally new, which is very rare in this area. I don't think we've seen a freeway built in greater LA since, what, the 105, right? The Century Freeway.
Correct. So the High Desert Corridor would be one of the new freeways to be built in LA County. But as you mentioned, that price tag is a little bit prohibitive in terms of future phases or development of the corridor. So we're really going to rely on the private sector to advance some of these components or the project forward.
What areas would be connected with this new high? Are we talking Victorville High Desert?
Correct. So the project currently spans from Palmdale to Victorville. And there are a couple existing roadways south of the proposed new highway. That'd be 138 and SR18. So if we can maybe do some improvements along those corridors to make the demand travel easier for those within that vicinity, that's also an option we're evaluating.
I know a lot of people get upset, too, when you talk about freeways being proposed and built in areas where there is very little residential area or more natural areas, right? And then you get people moving into those areas, and then you get into a situation where there's more sprawl. The sprawl goes even farther and farther out. And I also know, Isidro, that LA Metro is trying to do a lot to get people out of their cars and onto public transportation, onto a bike as a way to reduce traffic. And yet you're widening freeways, creating more freeways, making room for more cars. Doesn't that seem self-defeating?
With this High Desert Corridor project, it was multimodal. So it had a rail component, it had a highway component, a bikeway component, and a green energy corridor. So we weren't looking at it from only one context or perspective. And with that, which is we're trying to adapt to growing population growth and different demand needs and modes of travel. So we're looking at it through a larger lens than only the highway development component for this project.
Steve, can I add something to this?
Of course.
So we need to tie this debate about putting freeway expansion out on the fringes of the region in the high desert to the housing debate, affordability debate we're having in the basin right now. There's an enormous amount of demand for people to live in that arc that runs essentially from downtown to Santa Monica and then up to Pasadena. If left to its own devices, the market would create a lot more high-density housing in that area. And neighborhoods are, for a number of reasons that are understandable, sort of push back against that. And because of that, the demand has to go somewhere. We've got a crisis now, and the desire to say, well, let's not develop at high densities in those areas where we're building all of that transit infrastructure, the subways and light rail, where we really need those high densities to make it work effectively. We're not able to do that politically. And so we end up building out on the fringe, and then we have to accommodate the demand for the traffic out there. So it's really tied together. We can't separate these out. And right now, these debates about whether we should be building more high density housing along transit corridors in LA has a lot to do with the demand for housing out on the fringe.
And that's what we've been talking about over and over again, the 5 freeway going through the Grapevine. In that area, a lot more housing that's being proposed. And I would imagine the same for the corridor in the high desert. I do want to thank you both. Brian Taylor, professor of urban planning and director of the Institute of Transportation Studies over at UCLA, and Isidro Panuco, who manages the highway program over at LA Metro. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, coming up next, we fire up the flux capacitor and go back in time. Remember Carmageddon? Remember some freeway closures that had you in fear? Well, there are some coming up. But maybe there's a better way to improve things that doesn't involve shutting down freeways. How about narrowing them or taking away lanes? It's yours next on KCRW's Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now, with all this talk about expanding and quote-unquote improving other freeways, it's hard not to think to the last time the construction crews descended on what is arguably the most congested corridor in the country. Back in 2011, they completely shut down the 405 in both directions between the 10 and the 101 over an entire weekend. The event became known as Carmageddon. Carmageddon.
They've been bracing for this for weeks. A traffic disaster of biblical, you might even say, Hollywood proportions. A portion of the 405 freeway, the most heavily traveled highway in America.
Ah, the memories. Alyssa Walker's urbanism editor at Curbed LA. She joins me now to reminisce. Hello, Alyssa. Oh,
those were the days.
What were you doing, by the way?
Well, I was actually at my brother's wedding that weekend. So I was one of those people that, remember they said everybody was going to leave town because it was going
to
be so horrible?
I went to Vegas. Yeah. I went to Las Vegas
so
that weekend.
So I pretended that I was leaving town. But I actually did an interview with a New York radio station like the morning that started, and they were such jerks about it. They were like,
of course they
LA
were.
Will never get out of their cars.
This was actually the first of two Carmageddons, right? One was in 2011, the other was in 2012.
That's right. Yeah, we got a sequel. So exciting.
Of course, it was great. The first one, everyone was so freaked out about it. They actually stayed home. They called it Karma Heaven, right?
That's right. It was actually this one of these magical moments in LA history where people listened to the suggestions that it might be tough. And yeah, you had also a lot of local businesses giving, you know, discounts or free museum admission. There was all sorts of reasons to stay in
your
neighborhood.
There was an airline that charged what? Just a few bucks to go from
Long
Beach. I think
it was 405, right? It was like you could go from...
It was flight 405, and yeah. You could go from Long Beach to Burbank. Isn't that
right,
what it was?
It was JetBlue, and they decided to, you know, you could avoid the traffic by flying, which... I have some issues with that
pollution there.
But what was interesting is there were a group of people who raced the plane on bikes and they beat the people who were on the plane, which was so great.
Everyone warned you to stay home. They did stay home, and it wasn't as bad as first anticipated. Carmageddon 2, by the way, was much worse.
Yeah, people caught on.
UCLA, Alyssa, did some studies on air quality during Carmageddon. What did researchers discover?
They studied the effects of all different kinds of air pollution and, you know, measured it before, during, and after. And what they found was an immediate drop in the really, really bad particulate matter, the kind of pollution that comes from, it's directly attributable to cars, of course. But it was, of course, like, you know, locally much better in Santa Monica and Westwood, these areas. But it was a citywide improvement. Just that one little
change. Downtown LA.
The whole city saw a variety, you know, it varied depending on where you were. But no matter where you were in that LA basin, the air got better instantly.
There's another freeway project going on right now. This is the 60 freeway, which is going to be closed for 15 weekends. The 60 is a big thoroughfare, east-west, right? Is it going to be a Carmageddon again?
They're trying to bill it that way. Maybe they're trying to drum up the fear and keep people out of the area. But there are a lot of good alternatives to get around.
There's the 10,
60.
There's the 210, there's
the 91.
You could
also take, yeah, you know, Metrolink pretty far around the same areas. So I think there's enough alternatives that maybe it will get people to change their behavior, but I don't think it's going to cause a Carmageddon level.
So what is the solution? I mean, is it... If you shut down a lane or you say, okay, we're not going to have as many lanes on the 405 as we did before, does that encourage you or demand you to find another route or to think of other transportation options?
Well, I think if you have alternatives, like we've talked about before, something like bus rapid transit, you could take a very fast bus that got you from, say, Westwood to the Valley. There's also things like congestion pricing, which is something that Metro is also discussing in this particular area in West LA, because there's such bad traffic in this area. I think if you swap a lane, you know, the carpool lane is there, but it's obviously not incentivizing people to share their rides or get, you know, more people in their vehicle. So I think we need to think about this idea of this geometry where you want to take a lane and fill as many people as you can in the lane and move them at the maximum speed to get them over the hill and connect them with places like we're going to have a lot more rail and rapid transit options. We have the Orange Line on the other side of the hill to get people to. So we need to really think about making that seamless connection. If you want to get from, like, you know, LAX to the Valley, right? Like right now,
you can't do it.
There's just not a lot of options.
You could take the red. You could take the orange to the red,
right.
The subway,
yeah.
Right to Metro downtown.
Yeah, then you could take,
and then
yeah,
the Expo, or to the, what is it, the Green Line.
Now
right?
You're doing like the Californians, but the
right.
Transit version.
It's true. The 405, if you put mass transit along the 405, it certainly connects people better.
Yes, we need that. We have to do that now.
Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor over at Curbed LA. Alyssa, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, it sounds like something you'd hear in church or at a legal hearing, but LA is hoping affordable covenants can help housing stay affordable. It's DNA with Francis Anderton next. Our producer is Catherine Barnes and Jenna Cagle. Hi, Jenna. Sonia Geis edits, Reg Warnett and L.A. Phil Richards mix and engineer. Thanks to Drew Penner sitting in today. Hi, Drew. Good to see you. Kristen Bordahl spearheads it all. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA by podcast, wherever you get them. Subscribe. Learn more about your city and your region. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Honored by your presence. Thanks for your ear. Have a great day.